Welcome to On Tap with Corey and Ira, where they discuss Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. Here's your host, Corey Butler and Ira Carlson.
Welcome to episode number 31 of On Tap with Corey and Ira, your bi-monthly exploration into Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. I'm one half of your co-host, Corey Butler.
And I'm the better half, Ira Carlson.
Well, at least someone in this room believes that. We've got a fun show lined up, as they all are fun. It's a cool one going on today. We got a little bit of a theme going. Ira, why don't you tell the fine listeners what we've got on tap today?
Well, we got definitely a juicy show coming up here. We had a chance to head over to Tanzawald and catch up with them, both Steve and Genevieve Pittman, and chat a little bit about what they have going on and their one-year anniversary coming up here in a week.
And they are our second two-time guests.
Yeah, so we had a chance to talk to them right after they opened. Now we're going to find out a little bit how they're doing one year later. Then we got Andrew on to talk a little style of the week. We're talking a little Keller beer this week. And then, of course, some more beers of the week. And it's definitely a fruity day.
A lot of fun beers. Had a great conversation with Steve and Genevieve. Went a little long, so we'll probably keep this segment short. We tend to, at least as of late, ramble and maunder and maunder and just keep going. So we've got a great conversation with Steve and Genevieve. Come up here in just a minute. Stick around.
And now, time for the beers of the week brought to us by Firehouse Liquor of Dundas. Our first offering this week is Wee IPA from Summit Brewing Company out of St. Paul. Now, we've obviously had a few Summits on here, or we've talked about them over the time frame, but this one's a really interesting one. It's one of their newer ones out there, and as they're calling it, it's a sessionable IPA. So it comes in kind of lighter at the 4.7 ABV, and then also it only comes in at about 35 IBU. So it's really kind of a smoother, easier drinking IPA. They definitely are trying to do a little bit more tropical with this. So it, as they list it, it presents aggressive aromas of passion fruit, melon, pineapple, and tangerine, plus 30 malt flavors of bread crust and toast. So, yeah, it's a really good, full IPA. I'd call it an easy drinking IPA. Definitely enjoying this. I'm going to take another drink. What do you think?
Yeah, by the nature of the name, Wee IPA, it should be an easy drinking IPA. It's a sessionable IPA, which are kind of all the rage these days. A lot of different breweries are putting them out. We have talked about this one on the show. It came as part of the, I believe it's called the IPA pack. I think there's a more full name to it. So my apologies to someone on that for not having that off the top of my head. But it's a good beer. I think all those fruits that you mentioned meld together very well. There's a lot of body and character to this, and I like it. A lot of the sessionable IPAs I've had in the last year or two when they've really started popping up have been pretty thin. You know, sessionable because of the ABV is a little bit lower. That way you can have a little bit more. It's great for fishing. It's great for, hunting. It's probably not good for hunting. It's great for fishing. It's great for soccer. It's great for golfing. Whatever activity you do that doesn't involve firearms. Great for that. But they tend to be a little bit thinner.
Corey recommends drinking and hunting.
Well, I was talking about duck hunt. What are you talking about? Yeah, of course. Bang, bang. But I find this to be a good full-bodied beer in spite of its name. And obviously, wee is kind of a fun word, so they're having fun with it too. But hats off to them. You know, they don't put recipes out there, beers out there that they don't fully stand behind, and not surprisingly, this is a quality sessionable IPA. And again, not the crap on other breweries, but I've had a lot of sessionable IPAs because it's not something I'm drawn to necessarily. I'm more out of a curiosity factor. Bent Paddle's put out a good one. Summit's now got a good one. But I've had more not good ones than good ones. So this is definitely one worth checking out.
Yep, definitely.
It's the S&S of craft brewing, at least in this area. We've got Summit, 30 years strong. Then we've got Samuel Adams here, another S brewery that's 30-plus years strong. And what we're sipping on today here is their Rebel Juiced IPA. You know, they launched probably 4 or 5 years ago now their Rebel series, kind of approaching IPAs again, as IPAs were really ramping up about 4 or 5 years ago, and it was kind of taking the industry by storm. Sam Adams, of course, had to get in on that. And they create the Rebel line. And I've had this before. I've had several of their Rebel beers. They put out a nice Rebel IPA pack. I actually like it. I know a lot of people poo-poo on the idea of Sam Adams. This was my introduction to craft brewing, not this specific beer, but Sam Adams. So I have a lot of respect and appreciation for what they've done for me in my life. when it comes to beer. I don't want to get too emotional. But I like this beer. It's a Rebel Juiced IPA. It's got a tropical twist of mango, some citrusy hops. There's a bit of bitterness on the back end, but it's a pretty easy drinking beer. Comes in at 6.2% on the ABV scale. I actually like some of the other ones that come in, like the IPA pack that comes with this. I think they've got a grapefruit one, which is okay. I really like their double IPA. Then they've got a Rebel Rouser. But the Rebel Juiced IPA is pretty solid, too. It's definitely one I would recommend checking out. I think a lot of people don't necessarily buy Sam Adams anymore because everyone's be local, buy local, support the little guy, which absolutely you should. But that doesn't mean you should disregard good beer that's being made elsewhere. So this is one that people should check out. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's exactly what Summit's doing, too, where Sam Adams is starting to play around a little bit more with some extra styles and stuff. It's really interesting, the tropical twist of mango and citrus hops. They basically put they added mango juice in when they're doing it. It is an interesting flavor profile when you drink it because it starts out smooth, then the citrusy kind of stuff comes in, and then, like you said, the bitterness finishes at the end. So it's a really a different kind of a beer. It's definitely interesting. I would like to try it. I should have grabbed a glass and poured it in there because I'm curious about how hazy this is. It tastes hazy, if that's a thing. But no, definitely.
I think
really
it is.
Fun
it's well, that's mouthfeel. That's what you're talking about. Yep. It's mouthfeel. There's a little tickle in your throat, right, when you drink this?
Oh, yeah. So, no, really good beer here. So, and if you want to try either of these beers or any of the other beers we've talked about on past shows, they are conveniently found south on Highway 3 in Dundas at Firehouse Liquor.
Look for the fire truck. All right, we're having the distinct pleasure of coming to you from Tanzenwald Brewing right here in Northfield, Minnesota. We're catching up with Genevieve and Steve, prior guests on the show. How's it going, guys?
We're doing
good. Well, how are you guys doing?
We're still here, and we're sipping on some tasty beer, so it's a good Monday afternoon. We're recording this ahead of the big anniversary, and we're going to talk about that here shortly, the one-year anniversary. It's going to actually air next week. Actually, this show's airing on Saturday. It's going to come next week. When we pre-record, sometimes it's hard to keep dates straight, so,
okay, so
it'll be next Saturday.
Or the Saturday.
This show airs on the 14th.
The 14th.
Yep,
gotcha.
So the anniversary is the 20th, 21st, 22nd. And then for the entire following 362 days, right? You're just going to keep celebrating.
Yes,
right.
Yes, yes.
That's right.
We like to party.
Keep the celebration going.
There official anniversary date is 420.
Well, congratulations for you're almost there. I shouldn't say congratulations yet because you haven't made it, right?
So yeah, God knows what could happen in the next couple weeks.
We got meteors and nuclear bombs and stuff like that. Took a really dark turn here.
Anything's possible.
Maybe a blizzard, but you know.
Well, we are dealing with that today. It's coming, we know, so.
Flurries.
That's unfortunate. Stop. 6 to 8 inches, so. You love to hear numbers, don't you?
No, I almost threw my beer glass across the room.
It's great patio weather.
I'd have to clean it up.
Good restraint.
Thank you.
So before we get to the anniversary stuff, we should look back at the past year. We had you guys on the show. It must have been right after opening last year, I think in May or somewhere
thereabouts. Yeah, about a month after we opened.
Yes, and it was after we opened because I remember us bringing some growlers for you guys. So.
Yeah, we were just an infant.
Shh, so. Don't tell them those things.
Corey and Ira don't drink beer. That's a total lie.
It was only a strategy that we came to the brewery today. No, it's nice. This is the one day you guys are closed, so it's not too loud. You got a couple folks working over there and some light music playing. It's a beautiful setting you've set up here for us.
Thank you. It's my baby. I think she's beautiful, but of course I'm biased.
It is very beautiful.
Every parent thinks that.
So looking back on 50 weeks, roughly, almost a whole year, is it what you expected?
Yes and no.
It's a big opener.
Yes and no.
I would agree. Yeah, yes and no.
We're learning the seasonality and the rhythm of the community, which is great. That the hardest part about being a first-year business is not having the data to go by. You know, weather-wise, and in Northfield especially, you've got the school calendars, you've got four drastically different seasons, and it's
in a good year, there's four drastically different seasons.
Okay, two drastically different seasons, and
and 2 weeks in between.
Yeah, 2 weeks in between.
Mosquitoes will be here in a couple weeks.
A little bit different than the Bay Area where we were used to, but we're super, super happy to be back.
So what were happy surprises? I mean, obviously, you've got a blank slate that you started with last year and even the year prior as you guys embarked on this journey to open this beautiful place. Then you open, and then things happen. What were good things that happened that maybe you didn't expect or maybe you did expect?
Our beer has been very well received, especially at festivals. We noticed our tent will have a big old line out of it, and people will say, oh, we heard from my buddy that I've got to come try your smithereen or whatever it is, and that feels good.
Yeah, I would totally agree that I think the overall impression of our place has been well received. Just with the beer, our menu, all those things, people have been very happy. You know, the place here, it's nice. You know, I never really thought our brewery would ever turn out this nice looking. I figured it would be some pallet furniture, and maybe we would go rummage for some couches and kind of stuff like that.
Where were you hanging out in the Bay?
Lagunitas,
which is
exactly
that's pretty casual. Much how it is.
Yeah. But no, I was put in charge of designing the tap room. So
when you talk about the conception of it, that was in the conceptual stage before you even came to Northfield and saw this building. Like you're talking way back when this was just a seed of an idea.
Just when it was a seed of idea. And I always, for me, beer has always been paramount. So if the beer is good, I always figure that's the most important thing.
I agree.
And that's a thing that you definitely, as a beer business and having a brewery, that's important. It always is important. Consistency, well-made beer, all those things. But it's not always, that's only a part of, the piece of the puzzle. And that was one thing that I think we, definitely had a surprise with in this last year is that, a lot of it is, marketing and how you're perceived, even before anybody steps foot in the building as well. So, that those are very important things too, as well. So,
I was surprised. People do come for the ambiance, and it's funny because we had a great Valentine's Day. People said that they wanted to go somewhere romantic, and I guess looking around at the lighting and the, chandeliers and whatnot, this could be perceived as romantic craft beer, which is great because it's not something you see very often.
No, but, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this, is the food as well. I mean, it's complimentary, obviously, the food and beer, but it is a beautiful space. The vision's there. And Ira can probably speak to this a little bit better than I can because I've been here about 10 years. This has always been an empty building that I've driven by, and I knew it was the old creamery. Had no idea what was in here, what it looked like in here. And when you guys came to town and started working on it, I stopped by and we chatted. And it was just cool to see the transformation happen. Now, Ira, I know you've been here obviously your whole life. So was this ever in use in your life, or has it always been kind of a blight on the community because it just sits between two buildings? It was just on the edge of town and... Well, edge of downtown, I should say, although it is the end of town.
I wouldn't say blight in the sense that it's always been a nice building on the outside. You know, being an older creamery building, it wasn't falling apart or anything else.
But in terms of being just an empty building,
it
just sat there.
But this area has always been, until the hotel came in and other stuff, has been mainly just gas station industrial. Way back years ago, there was actually a lumber yard across the way.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and when that closed up, that lumber building was one that I actually looked at and said that would make a great steakhouse because it had this beautiful top level here, the street level that you could have gone in on, but you could have had one of those stairs downstairs, like a little patio deck space back there before all that stuff went in. So it's always been one of those spots which could have used something, but it actually adds true, pedestrian traffic and stuff here now as well, so...
Yeah, so I think that has shown through why maybe you're busy on Valentine's Day, because it's a beautiful space. You guys do good work here on both sides of the operation with the beer and the food. And honestly, you look at Northfield, there's not much for. I want to say this delicately. Above average fare, I guess. I mean, there's a lot of pizza places. There's good food here, but like sit down, kind of set the mood type place. There's like Ole Store and you guys probably.
Which is funny because I feel like there's definitely the appetite for it here, and we're not even full service restaurant. We're what they call fast casual, which is counter service. What you get at Panera Bread or Culver's, or you get a number and we bring you your food. We don't expect you to bus your own table. We don't. We check back and see how your food is. We provide some follow-up service, but you have to go to the bar to get what you, or the counter to get what you need. And people have had a hard time wrapping their heads around that. But what I like about it is it puts the customer in control. They can, if they don't have to wait for a server, they can get up and get what they need when they need it. But yeah, we're not even full service restaurant, which we were planning on moving into eventually. However, our menu drastically changed about 6 months in, 5 months in. We cut our menu down to half of what it was.
So is this one of the challenges you'd say you've found year one?
That was the biggest challenge,
trying
definitely.
Trying to find the tone of the community?
Yes. And another thing I've heard from the community that I keep hearing is that our food was too... This cracks me up. Too fancy. But
that's what I was just alluding to.
I think it's funny. We don't have the meat and cheese plate anymore, partly because, you know, people didn't want to pay the $12 for local meats and cheeses, which, you know, I get. But then we also have a bunch of people complaining that we don't have the meat and cheese board. So it's really hard to please everyone. And it makes me sad because I'm a yes person. I want to say yes to everyone and accommodate as much as I can. But what happened was 6 months in, we found out that 8 items accounted for over 60% of our sales.
Wow.
And so we kept those 8 items and a couple more and just rode with that. And it made our kitchen run so much smoother, everything more streamlined, could focus more.
And I think today's technology allows you to be flexible on your menu. You don't have to wait for... Go to the print shop and have a menu designed and printed. You can have your own template, everything you need to do. There's modern printers that work great, you know, with nice little sleeves. You can change your menu at will to kind of adapt and be more flexible.
We just added burgers to our menu after much debate. We just kept hearing, where's the burgers? Where's the flatbread? Why don't you have burgers? Why don't you have flatbread? I'm like, because every other restaurant in Northfield does. We're trying to do something different. But I gave in, and we've got Fisher Family Farms sources the meat for us. It comes from the beef for us. Even though they're a pork farm, they find the beef providers that they are friends with, and they have a network for distribution. And so we get local beef and local pork, and now we've got a burger and a veggie burger on, which I didn't expect, but they sell like crazy, so I'm for it.
Well, it's a learning curve.
I wanted to just offer something different because I know Northfield craves variety, and that is the spice of life, I think. We've got 3 very different breweries in town. People would say to me, how are you going to compete? How can you have a brewery on every corner? I'm like, no. We're very different, and it's good to have variety. You know, I've heard people like, sometimes I'm in the mood for you guys, so, like your vibe, and sometimes I'm in the mood for Chapel or Imminent, and it depends on my mood, and that's so how I am when I eat or drink. It depends on, you know, am I in a stout mood or am I in Pilsner mood. I think people feel the same way when they go to an establishment, what the vibe is that they want to feel.
Yeah, I agree. I think the beer is complimentary. Steve and I were talking about this before we start recording. I also think the ambiance is complimentary. There's different vibes. And again, I think this lends better to date night and just coming out and hanging out and having a good time. No, let's go back to the menu. Obviously, stuff was held over. It's obviously year one. It's a lot of learning, like you said. You didn't have a master class on what to expect in Northfield, Minnesota for 4 seasons when it comes to beer and food. So you're learning as you go. I think mostly a lot of your starters probably stayed on, at least what I can tell from what I've ordered before, you know, the 5 or 6 month mark to what I order now, the bar bites. The sausages obviously stayed on.
The sausages and the bar bites stayed.
You want to just talk a little bit about the menu? I mean, you mentioned a lot of the local partners you work with. Obviously, it was a huge part of what you guys have done since day one.
And it still is. And even with the things that we do get from, say, Sysco, which is the only big supplier we work with, they have a local program. I'm actually going to be speaking at the Minnesota Women's Agricultural Leadership Conference in 2 weeks.
Cool.
With
it's this our, week when this airs.
Oh, cool.
It's happening right now.
Yeah, the 11th. And with our local rep from Cisco, and she helps us figure out what's local and what I can get from them, you know, that is as local as we can get, and how partners are able to to form relationships with Cisco, which I think has been the hardest part of going local. When we opened, I had a kitchen manager who was able to go and make all these errands and run around to different farms and pick up the little things. Once we cut the menu back, we didn't have that that ability. So distribution from farmers has been, I think, our biggest hurdle with getting things locally. It's either we go to a farmer's market, which I can't wait till our farmer's market in Northfield is back up and running, or we run around to a bunch of different farms. So we're right now only able to work with farms that deliver. And luckily, a lot of them do, and they do a very good job, especially Fisher Family Farms. We've been so happy with them. They've been so accommodating, and their product is great. And we just started working with them.
Good. Well, I think it speaks for itself. It's obviously very high quality, well-made food that people are pining for, and you're seeing the results because it's still in the menu, right?
Yeah, and we're going to like changing the menu. We'll probably keep this menu for the foreseeable future, but we do have weekly specials, mm-hmm. 1 or 2 weekly specials to change it up to, you know, keep that variety going.
And on the beer side, because again, that's why we're all here.
Beer, that's why we're here.
We also want to make sure people are aware that Steve's still sitting at the table with us.
Sorry.
No, I was joking.
Yes, I'm still here.
Hey, there he is. As Genevieve falls over. looking at the beer from year one, I mean, I think overall it's been pretty positive. We've talked quite a few times. I've been here once or twice. And it's been a good year of beer. How have you seen yourself grow in that year as a brewer, but also in how you approach the beer for this community? Because you didn't have a template for what beer in Northfield should be.
No, I came into it wanting to have an identity. And if I even think back to probably doing the radio broadcast with you guys, you know, a year ago, not my idea of kind of what we do here for beer has never really changed. I didn't say I really wanted a flagship. I never really came into it thinking that. I was kind of wanting to keep it interesting and rotate, but we did also at the same time wanted to target, hey, we got, you know, a third of our menu being hoppy beers or hop forward beers. And that doesn't necessarily mean an IPA. That could mean like our Twisted Sister. I was talking about earlier, well, before the broadcast started, it's a hop forward brown ale. Our Gottlieb is dry hopped as well. So that is also a hop forward lager. And so with, you know, Smithereen coming out, and that became very popular for us. You know, I had Oddfellows IPA, Guns Ablazin's been very popular for us. So I love hops and what they can bring to beer. I do, because they bring a lot of interesting flavor to the beer without having to add an adjunct. And what I mean by that is by adding fruits and all these other things that aren't normally associated with your core ingredients in beer, and they can be mimicked with hops. And that was always something that I learned. That was a big thing that I learned from working at Lagunitas. They were very interested in what hops could bring to beer and in different flavors it could bring to beer. And I got caught up and swept up in what they were doing there as well. Not 100%. My beers are not, you know, Lagunitas 2.0 by any means, but it's definitely an idea that I brought from that culture that I was at for a long time. So, and I admired that in them, that they were willing to explore something that I don't know if everybody else was doing that, you know, that was something that they were doing. And so that's kind of where we've kind of at least tried to keep our identity is like, hey, we got hoppy beers. I try to keep a sour beer on. That's been interesting, to say the least, in Northfield. I know if Tanzimald opened in you know, Northeast or something like that, I probably could have half my menu being sours and people would eat it up or drink it up. But here it's, we're still kind of dipping our toe in the water for a lot of these styles and different things that beer can be. So I still have customers who come in and say, oh, sour beer, like what's that? And I can explain to them that sour beers have been around longer than some of these other styles have been. Berliner Weiss is older than a lager. So, you know, these are beers, and they've always been beers, but people, they're just haven't been popular until now. And so now, you know, to be able to reintroduce those things to people has been pretty awesome. And that's always the cool part of being a brewery and being a craft brewer, is that you get to, you know, bring these new things to people. And, but yeah, you know, having the community here in Northfield, I don't look at it being like I can brew anything I want, because it is a business and you got to sell stuff. But at the same time, knowing your customer, and that's been a challenge over the past year. I've definitely kind of dialed things back from how I first started, ABV wise, especially. I've kind of cranked things down to try to make things a little bit easier for people to drink. And
just gotta wait till we get Uber in town, right?
That's right.
Oh, please, yes. That's
we're during the summer.
Call Uber corporate.
You know, when the weather gets a little bit nicer and people can walk and bike again, I think that those things are back on the table. But high alcohol beers also bring a lot of flavor, and you lose out on those things when you don't have those offered. I think it's a delicate balancing act. Like right now on our menu, we have the Dunkoff Dunkel, and it is 4.3%. It's the lowest ABV beer that Tanzenwald has ever produced, but it's got a lot of flavor it's got a lot of malt forward flavor, and that's just what the style brings. And
it's a credit to your ability, though, too, I think.
That was one of those.
Draw that out.
We finished it, and I drank it for the first time to do tasting notes on it, and I was pretty blown away that it had that much flavor for being that low in alcohol. I certainly wasn't actually shooting for that low. I was shooting for maybe under 5, but at 4.3, I was very happy with it. I was like, nobody could drink this and think that it's a 4.3% beer. There's just no way. It's just got way too much flavor. And to do that, to bring a lot of flavor to such a low alcohol beer is very challenging.
You know, Ira and I do a lot of research, and we've been known.
You mean drinking?
Research. Our wives occasionally listen to the show, so we do a lot of research.
A kid.
And I think the Dunkel is probably a top 3 beer for me that you've produced last year. I really like it. I think you nailed it. So all good beer. It's been a fun year.
I'm gonna have to re-verify in a little bit here just to make sure, you know, before I form a full opinion, you know. Multiple taste samplings before, you know, coming out.
More research.
The rye opener here that's waiting for someone to try.
I haven't had it in a while, so I should.
But I was gonna, you know, to back up a little bit, having the other two breweries around, with them being not in the same vein as you, each one kind of running their own different way, do you find that actually it helps too? Both the Northfield palate expands, and also you can kind of find pockets that they're not in.
Absolutely. I think it makes people more excited about beer, which I love. And we've been able to collaborate with them in advertising in the Growler. Say this month we've got a co-op ad between the City of Northfield, us, Imminent, and Chapel, all saying, hey, visit Northfield. We got lots of breweries for you.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and there's a tourism company in Rochester that's gonna start doing just a Northfield loop. So that's awesome. And I feel like the only enemy of breweries is big beer. You know, we are carving out a bigger chunk of the market, I feel, every year. With millennials,
yeah, it's like, what, 14% now?
Tastes are changing.
Maybe to the novice beer consumer, listener, researcher, whatever you want to call them, sounds like a small number, but that's pretty damn big when you look at what it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, it was probably 6%.
And that's one thing I want to touch on with Steve is obviously the industry's really changed and transformed in the last 15 years in terms of style. So, you know, the Beer de Garde coming back and these different saisons and so on and so forth. Has education been a really big part of what you guys are doing here? Because when you say your identity is hop forward, I think people conflate the idea of hoppiness with bitterness. And I wouldn't say any of your beers are necessarily bitter, but the hop definitely is present, which I'm a fan of and I love. But do you have to, like, and obviously you're not working the bar all the time because you're busy, you know, making beer. But is it, and maybe Genevieve can get on this too. Is it something you guys deal with a lot, just trying to explain people to people what the beer is, what the expectations should be? Obviously, ultimately, it's subjective. It's what their taste says. But not to have them scared off because their immediate thought is, this beer should be this because it's hoppy.
We, just speaking as someone that's behind the bar a lot, we encourage people to taste things that are out of their comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. We were talking before the show as well about somebody came in here last week, and maybe they're a listener, I don't know, but
everybody
I
is.
I don't want to point them out, you know. But I wasn't there to talk with them. I was working in the back, and they told one of my bartenders that our Smithereen IPA shouldn't be technically an IPA. And the funny thing is because Smithereen being a New England style IPA, it didn't have a registered, you know, style yet. It was a stylistic. It was hops, haze, and the bitterness normally isn't there. It's supposed to kind of be on the outside of that. So
we did a big training with our employees early on in our week-long Tansimal boot camp that we structured before we opened, and we taught them the difference between hoppiness and bitterness, and that hoppiness can be many things. It can be fruity, and it can be spicy, and it can be grassy.
Resiny, lemongrass.
Yeah, it can be, what's the word? Dank? It can be a lot of things besides bitter.
That's reserved for bitter. Colorado beers, right?
Sure. In California and Oregon and Washington.
Taking the world by.
Shout out, 420. Anniversary.
So education of the employees, education of the consumers. And that's a big thing with the growing pies. You guys continue as a collective independent brewers to battle against big beer. More people are coming to your establishments who maybe haven't had a Northeast style IPA or a sour or hell, even a decent lager. So you have to talk to them through it, even now in 2018.
That's still my favorite part, though. I love turning people on, especially to our Hit the Bricks Belgian Golden Strong. I feel a lot of the ladies really love that one because there is so much esters from the yeast, but it's not a Belgian that gives off too much bubblegum, banana, clove, blah, that kind of thing. It's just fruity and nice and light, but it packs a punch ABV-wise. What,
7.4 right now.
Okay.
But that is the lowest threshold for that style.
Yeah.
So when you're making a Belgian Golden Strong, you're looking, it's going to be strong. No matter what you do, if you want to call it that, you're going to have to make it strong. Otherwise, yeah, it starts dipping into, you know, kind of a different style. And there we go, talking about styles again. So I never brew to be, I'm not somebody who needs to nail a style. The closest thing that I've done to try to actually nail a style is doing a classic beer. So I think Hit the Bricks does count because I did try to, but I do some things that a normal Belgian Golden Strong doesn't do. I do spice it. People probably don't even notice. I don't ever really say in my descriptions what I put in there because I don't really need people to be like, I don't like Grains of Paradise or something like that. You know, it has coriander and Grains of Paradise in it. And Grains of Paradise is pretty much like black pepper almost. And so,
That's spicy.
So, there you go. That's spicy.
Secondary name. We're talking about black pepper beers.
But it doesn't have to necessarily fall into a style. And
you've also said that Hit the Bricks could technically be considered an imperial saison if you want to get super technical about it.
Well, it depends on the ingredients that you're putting in there. And that's the thing. If you're locked in on what the style is, you're thinking, I think, about the wrong things. You should be thinking about the flavor in the end product. So really I want people to enjoy in the end product. I want people to enjoy the beer. Like if it's good, it's good. And it doesn't matter what the style is, you know, styles will win you medals. Sometimes medals aren't really worth the metal that they're written on, because people have to constrict themselves so much to fit into a style. Whereas, you know, a best in show medal, I think, is would be something I would be a little bit more proud of, because it's not in,
or people buying your beer because they vote with their dollar.
They vote with their dollar, and that was something I heard from Tony McGee, you know, the former, I said former owner of Lagunitas. I want people to know. I want people to get that right. But he always would. He was always very. You know, he believed that people vote with their dollar. And if the beer is good, people will vote with their dollar. And that's the biggest form of flattery, is that people will come in and actually buy your beer. You know?
Well, the percentage of beer drinkers that would actually know that your beer is within a style specifically is going to be so small that, you know, again, I think it comes down to, you know, we always say we're beer enthusiasts, not Cicerones. We just like to enjoy a good beer. And when I come here, Hit the Bricks is my go-to beer. I look around a little bit, see if there's something else I want to try, and if I'm not feeling it that day, I go right to the Hit the Bricks, because that is my favorite beer, you know, and that's, again...
And you don't care what style it is.
Right. Well, right. I do, in the sense that I like the Belgian style. I've, you know, within the last year, a couple different places have produced a Belgian that has made me go, wow, I'm really, wasn't normally on my radar of, you know, beer that I normally like to have, and now it's in there, you know, and right now, Alts. There's a new one for me where I'm... If I'm seeing an alt now, I'm kind of leaning that way. There's, you know, my style changes, and, you know, but Belgian is one where yours was one of the main ones that opened up my mind to it a little bit. Like, wow, I really like this style. So I'm voting with my money.
Steve the palette expander. There you go. New name tag. There you go.
New superhero name.
Yeah, that'd be a good title. I like that title.
So, not including recipe adjustments, how many different beers have you brewed in year one? Around 20, probably?
I think I've done more than that. I'm thinking we're... Oh, you may be right. 20 could be about right. I haven't actually counted.
I checked in for all of them.
I haven't checked exactly how many different recipes. I do have all those, you know, on an Excel spreadsheet. But I know we're closing in on batch number 50 here for a year.
Nice.
Very close. And, you know... And some of those are double batches, too, so I've probably done, you know, whatever. But if recipe-wise, definitely. And it's weird, you know, the first, like, 6 months are you're still feeling everything out. So we opened with four different beers. But we, you know, by the time, like, Smithereen and Guns A-Blazin basically came out in late May, early June. Late May, early June, and those quickly became very popular. And those were kind of in my, hey, this is kind of B lineup. These are the first ones I'm going to try that are going to be a little bit more outside the box beers. Not really like a double IPA and a New England style IPA are, you know, not seen or, you know, been or haven't been around and people haven't tried stuff like that. But I definitely tried to canvas and have a bunch of stuff ready for people, you know, who had different palates to come here and drink the first four beers and be like, okay, there's different colors, different flavors, all that kind of stuff. Everybody could find something, hopefully, that they like. But those B lineup beers, which were Guns A-Blazin, Double IPA, Smithereen New England IPA, and Hit the Bricks, instantly became probably our most popular beers. And that,
sure,
that's definitely kind of trips me out. I just brought Rye Opener back, and that was an opener beer. And I haven't had Odd Fellows on in probably like 6 months. So because people tend to tended to gravitate towards like these really hoppy beers where, you know, Odd Fellows was kind of more of a classic West Coast IPA, had a little bit of malt going on, a little bit of hops, but nothing was like overdone. I was trying to kind of shoot for like that middle ground where you get a little bit of hoppiness, a little bit of bitterness, a little bit of malt. So that's actually a credit to the people who come in here and drink beer. I think that in many ways, the local community has been very supportive of having things, you know, new styles and a lot of different flavors as well.
Well, and the three that you touched on, the would you call them the B Slate or the secondary wave of beers that came through, maybe? Is
pretty much, yeah. My secondary, you know, recipes, ones that I was like, okay, I can branch out a little bit, you know.
But those are all bigger beers. Those are the Smithereen, the guns, the hit the bricks, those are all 7+ on the ABV. So there may be something to that, but like you alluded to, there's a correlation between ABV and character and flavor. I don't want to say outright, because you can have a lower ABV beer that's full of flavor and character, but it's probably a little bit easier to find those when you have a little more room to work with, too.
One of the things we talked, you and I have talked about, Steve, over the last, you know, every, you know, so often when I stop in, is as you bring some of these back, you've actually been tweaking the recipes a little bit, kind of getting them more of where you wanted to go and stuff. And so I think that's been interesting, too, because I noticed it with the Hit the Bricks, you know, even when the ABV went down, some of the flavor really did kind of pop out a little bit, which you were surprised about. And so it is kind of fun to see you working through some of those. Has there been some that have been are really dialed in yet, or are there some you're still kind of tweaking and playing with a little bit?
I think the one of the few that I haven't messed with, well, there's two that come to mind. Smithereen and Gottlieb, or Pilsner, were our two that I have really not touched other than trying to maybe get my ABVs where I want them a little bit more so. I've been toning them down just a bit. I thought Gottlieb has been a little hot, so I've been trying to get that down, and same thing with Smithereen, and just to make them a little bit more smooth. Oh, Hit the Bricks as well. I've actually never fooled with that recipe.
Didn't the yeast strain change?
Yes. Yeah, you're right. The first generation was
you
from
almost called Ira a liar. He's like, I know this difference. Like,
we had this conversation. I know.
Well, yeah, me and Ira have had this conversation about the yeast.
The very first one came from a major yeast supplier, and the second one came from a yeast supplier that is a friend of mine out in San Francisco, who owns the Yeast Bay. You know, shout out to the Yeast Bay. I switched over just because I really wanted to support not only a friend, but a fellow small businessman. And sure. He's very interested in sour beers and supplying for sour beers. And that's a very, you know, big thing. It's blowing up out west, and it has been for a little while, not only barrel age, but kettle sours as well. But he has also been very at forefront on Belgian yeast as well. So, you know, we started using his Wallonian strain, which is, I've heard, is possibly from Brewery Fantôme out in Belgium. I'll probably never know that, because Nick would never, ever tell me probably where he got it from. But
it sounds awesome. That's I'm guessing 99% of the people listening have no idea what you just said.
No, and I don't want to get too technical.
Including the two guys talking to you.
Yeah.
Like, oh, right, that sounds great.
Yeah, I don't want, I mean, you could go out into a good bottle shop and probably find Fantôme.
Sure.
But so that did change. I kind of wanted to support some small, you know, yeast suppliers. I'm going to hope to keep on doing that in the future here as well, you know, especially if we start doing... Yeah, we're a German name brewery. I'm probably going to come out with a, you know, Hefeweizen or a Dunkelweiss or something like that would be fun here, especially. Well, yeah, they're great summertime beers. We're probably not going to throw a lemon or an orange slice in there for you, but those are great summer beers. They're, you know, very German inspired, and that goes back to the Dunkel. I do like to brew a classic beer every once in a while, and they're fun, and It's fun as a brewer to kind of do something a little bit different, even though it's been done and it's out there and all that thing. But some of those are lost beers, like the, you know, a Munich Dunkel is an ancient beer. You know, it predates, you know, any pale lager. It comes from a time where everything was floor malted, and so basically all the malt turned out kind of red, or, you know, got burnt or whatever they did. They tried, it might have even been a little smoky. So, you know, those are what people drank 200 years ago in Germany, and that's probably almost what every beer looks like in Germany. It was probably all a little bit red. So to kind of bring that back and do it well, or just at least kind of do it justice is, you know, that's a fun thing for a brewer to do, you know. And I don't have to keep pushing the envelope. Sometimes it's fun to go back and do something really old school too. Well, I haven't brewed Oat Fellows yet, and I guess I could transition to this. So this is the beer that we're going to do for our one-year anniversary. The Odd Fellows was our first IPA, and it was definitely middle of the road, but it did actually contain a decent little dose of oats in it. I know, like I said, a lot of times I have beers, I don't actually say what's in them. Odd Fellows being, you know, named after a park here in Northfield. So it was supposed to be like a Northfield's IPA. And it was definitely a West Coast style, kind of middle of the road, malty, hoppy, not too alcoholic, kind of 6%, whatever, just like in that IPA, like right in the middle of the road of what a typical West Coast IPA is supposed to be. Now, what I'm going to do with Oatfell is that since I had a little bit of oats in there, I'm just going to ratchet that up by probably like tenfold. I'm going to probably just leave it hazy because that's probably what it's going to look like unless I find it.
Kids love their hazy beers these days.
And it's not going to be a New England style. I am definitely going to make it bitter, and I'm definitely going to have the malt in there. And it's all my IPAs, I feature different hops too. So even when I had Oddfellows, Smithereen, and Guns Ablazin' on there, they really feature like a different type of hop. Even though it's a hop blend that's always in there, but one of them's usually prominent. So that way you can have three IPAs, and they do really kind of taste much different from each other, sure. You know, depending on the profile. So that having multiple IPAs is not a bad thing, you know, as long as they don't taste the same. That's
pretty nuanced beer.
Yes, so having an oat-heavy IPA is definitely something that'd be kind of fun to have here.
So when you say it's going to be hazy, I mean, those are oat particles floating through it? Or?
Yeah, it's protein that never really settles out, and oats and wheat and rye, to a certain extent, really have a hard time clarifying out of beers.
So what does that do to the mouthfeel? I mean, is that more the juiciness that people talk about for those who are maybe haven't delved into the style? I won't say Northeast because you said it's not going to be an NE, but you know, stuff that isn't maybe filtered, that you just have a different mouthfeel, right?
Yeah, it definitely has like a lot more body, you know. It definitely comes, it's not thin like a wine would be, you know, or something like that. I don't know. I'm trying to compare it to some other beverage that you would have, but it definitely comes across as having a lot more, like, almost like more like weight to it, you know, sure. When you drink it.
And that's going to be coming out, debuting during the anniversary?
That will be.
We are going to tap that keg on 420 at 4:20 in the afternoon.
Oh, perfect. I have one more question before we get to the big anniversary reveal and what's going to be going on. Because part of that anniversary will be the music. I just want to touch on the music that you've done in the past year, giving people another venue, another opportunity to showcase their talents, but also for people to come in and enjoy it. Along with a nice pint. Talk a little bit about what you've done with music here in this lovely space.
I love our musicians, and I feel like that is mutual from them. I feel like they love us. It's just a fun place to play. You know, they get free beer and free food, and so what's not to love about that? And
I think I can play a kazoo if you want me to come in on Sunday.
Absolutely. Actually, speaking of kazoo, Cole Lotti, the woman that plays with A Single Pair, they're the duo that are playing for her anniversary party. She plays a heck of a kazoo.
Oh.
Yes, I didn't know that kazoo could be played like that, but she does a great job of doing the melody on a kazoo. And there's going to be another musician, Jim Skinner, that plays a very crazy instrument. I forget what it is called, but it's huge and tall, and it has 12 strings, and it's kind of like a board, but not. I don't even know how to describe it, but they are so much fun, and I'm super excited to have them for our anniversary.
It's been a fun opportunity for people to come in. I've come in and see a few friends play, Dave Hudson, Mark Ross, and you've got a lot of people who play the circles around here, and mm-hmm. And then it seems like you've brought in some new people that weren't previously introduced to the Northfield scene.
We've got a couple from the Twin Cities that come down and are regulars either once a month or once every other month on a Sunday, and that's Mary Cutrafello and Ronaldo Moreno, who have really developed a following in Northfield, and they
Mary had been playing in Northfield for at least 5 years.
Oh, had she? Okay, yeah, she'd been playing at the tavern,
yeah,
right?
She'd been playing up at the tavern for a long time because I'd seen her many, many years ago.
Yeah,
from the beginning. So
she has a huge following. I mean, people come just to see her, and I really feel lucky that that I will someday be able to say, Ronaldo Moreno used to play our brewery when he's a big old hotshot, because I feel like he will be. And yeah. So those are names to look for on our Sunday calendar.
All right, big weekend is next weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the 20th, 21st, 22nd. Walk people through what they can expect when they show up on, 3 o'clock on Friday?
We do have some surprises up our sleeve, which is going to be fun. But I can tell you there are going to be free snacks, some chips and dip. We make house-made chips out of russet potatoes and our beer cheese sauce.
Which are very good.
Oh, yeah, it's slightly addictive.
And filling.
And some door prizes. It's going to be $4 pints on April 20th. We're going to have music every night of that week. We are going to have $6 Sloppy Joe grilled cheese sandwiches.
Whoa.
Yeah. Delicious.
I'm guessing that is what it sounds like. But
just great munchy food. Yeah.
Never heard of a Sloppy Joe grilled cheese, but it sounds pretty good.
Well, hey, taking two great things and mashing them. Yep.
Music all weekend.
Music all weekend. There might be who I was just talking about, Ronaldo Moreno, the amazing musician from Minneapolis. He will be playing on Sunday, and we are also going to have a special guest on Sunday who shall not be named.
Ira? No.
No, he's big in the brewing industry.
Bill Nye.
We haven't confirmed it yet.
Well, that sounds like a pretty fun-filled weekend. And the max capacity here is, 300-400 people? So you got plenty of room.
Yeah, plenty of room.
Patio will be open 1,000. By then.
No, yeah.
It'll be 60 degrees by then, so the patio will be open.
You better believe that patio will be open. Please, Lord, let the patio be open.
Any final thoughts as we wrap up? I know we talked a lot about year one and not as much about the anniversary, but people need to just come experience that for themselves, I think.
Yeah.
They got the bullet points on it. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Year one. Any final thoughts?
It's just been so good to be part of Northfield. I was just a tourist in this town for 10 years. Mm-hmm. My best friend lived here, and I would spend extended periods of time in this town, a week at a time, 10 days at a time for 10 years. All the theater shows, Rock and Roll Revival. I saw it through the theater kids scene,
Yeah.
So I saw it through, because the people that are, the weirdos, and so this town is so multifaceted and so fun. It's like you've got the arts, you've got the colleges, and you've got the townies, that is like this big townie pride that, they've had third generation here, and they're all, it's a melting pot. It's of cultures. It's pretty cool. And everyone just gets along famously and loves each other. And it's just Minnesota nice at its best.
Well, I'll speak for Ira. I know we're damn happy you guys came here. So thank you for doing that. And thanks for giving your time two times in 1 year. We'll have to do it again.
Well, thanks
soon.
For having us two times in 1 year.
Yes, exactly. Thanks for having us. We appreciate seeing you guys here and what you guys have done. I'm going to give a shout out to your radio show, because that's a cool thing for Northfield. It really is. You guys are here. You're promoting local beer, doing craft beer. That's an awesome thing.
In a beer centric little town in what could be considered rural Minnesota, I guess maybe could be considered suburban. It's cool to have three breweries here and a beer focused radio show, and I think we're gonna put this dang town on the map.
We're all in this together. What's that song, right?
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. On that note, as I have a terrible singing voice, thanks for joining us again. We'll see you probably tomorrow, I'm sure.
Anytime. All right, good. I'll pour you guns.
Hey, all right.
Hey, this is Andrew Burns coming at you with another Style of the Week. This week we're talking about Keller beer. Now, Keller beer is an older style of beer that comes from Germany. Keller means unfiltered, and really what this is an unfiltered German ale. Now, most people know Germany for their delicious lagers, but there are some ales that come out of Germany. And in fact, ale was the first beer brewed in Germany before they developed lagering. So a Keller beer is almost a throwback beer. It's usually a pale golden color. Low to medium hoppiness, low body with a dry finish, but it has a unique cloudiness and yeastiness due to the fact that it is intentionally unfiltered. Sometimes you'll see the word Keller thrown around in front of other beer styles, like a Keller Pils or a Keller Alt, and really all that means is it's you take a regular beer style and leave it unfiltered, and you get a Keller beer.
That's going to put a wrap on this show. Thanks to Steve and Genevieve for hosting us over at the beautiful Tanzimald Brewing Company space. Great beer. We had a great time talking to them, as always. It's not like we haven't seen them in last year, so if you didn't catch that in the interview, we've been there a time or two in the last year.
Yep, just a couple times.
Great place to be. Definitely check them out. Wonderful beer, great food, good host. They do a good job over there, so thanks to those guys. Thanks to Andrew, as always, for providing us with our style of the week. Thanks to Firehouse Liquor for supporting the show through Beers of the Week. We will be back in 2 weeks with Keepsake Cidery.
Yeah, a Fermentation Friend. We haven't had one of those on in a little while, so that's going
to
be fun.
I know you've been just itching to get the Fermentation Friend out there, both in saying the name, but also having someone on, so we're happy
to
have.
I know, but it's a fun term.
Yeah, Nate will be joining us from Keepsake Cidery. Great guy. I know they've put a lot of good product out there. Both he and his wife, obviously, working the farm there, and not too far from here, and done this, and doing a lot of good work there. So that's going to be on at 11 a.m. April 28th. That's a Saturday, of course, here on KYMN Radio 95 The One. If this is where you listen, if you listen to us online, obviously you can find the website, ontapnorfield.com. You can also find it on podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Player FM, TuneIn Radio. Search for it. You'll probably find it somewhere. So we appreciate the support there as well. You can keep up with what we're doing on social media. We're on Facebook and Twitter at ontapnorfield. See who our upcoming guests are. Like we said, our next show in 2 weeks will be Keepsake Cidery. We've got a whole host of great guests come up here for the rest of the spring, whenever spring starts, and into summer. So you can find out what we've got coming up there. We're also on Instagram. We post photos in all three mediums, but Instagram obviously is the picture-friendly place, so we try to make sure we get some good photos out on there. You can find us on there at On Tap with Corey and Ira, full name. I can't remember why we didn't get that with the other two, but On Tap Norfield works for the other ones. Next week here, if you're listening with the radio audience, you can find Norfield Outdoors, 11 a.m. on Saturday. Otherwise, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Cheers.
Cheers.